You should recall from last time that we went through some new stuff. We learned two techniques to make constructing proofs easier for you, indirect proof and conditional proof. And we also learned to construct a proof of invalidity. Let's just review that stuff before we go on any further. I think it would help you to see some more examples done here. So I'm going to do my best to supply them for you. And I'll try to do it without wrecking the place. Here's an example of an invalid argument on the board. And I'm going to remind you of how we proceed with these. When an argument's invalid, you can prove that it is by assigning the conclusion, each member of the conclusion, T or F, in order to make that line false. It's an implication that should have been written this way for you guys. Okay, this is if A is true, G or F is true, and we have to make that false. The only way to make an implication false is to assign it TF. So A has to be true, and G and F both have to be false, because a disjunction is false if and only if both members of it are false. And an implication is false if and only if the first member is true and the second member is false. So we are forced to assign true to A, false to G, and false to F. Here's true to A. Is there a G anywhere? False to G, therefore true to not G. And then we have F. And I see an F over here, so it is false. Now, the project is to try to get all of the premises to come out true, despite the fact that we have these assignments forced on us. If we can do it, we've proven the argument's invalid. If we can't do it, then either we made a mistake or it is valid. Let's see what we can do here. It looks as though F is false. Oh, we should have made it false down here as well. And G is true. We've taken care of that. So what we need to do is make sure that we do not have in line one, true implies false or false. One of those at least has to be true, if not both. So let's just make the B true for now. And that takes care of line one. It also means that line three is taken care of, because since B is true, not B is false, and false implies anything is true. So now we've taken care of lines 1, 3, and 5. They are all true. Let's see if we can do the same for 2 and 4. Since the first part of line 4 is an implication, an if-then, and the antecedent is false, this whole thing is true. We need this one to be true as well. We don't have any assignments there at all. So here's what we can do. We can make this D false, in which case this line is true, and that makes not D true. So here we have false implies something, something implies true, and it won't matter what the others are. This one's true, and this one's true, so line four is true. And there is a proof that that is an invalid argument. Remember the chart I gave you, the falsehood chart. A conjunction is true only if both members are true, so anything else makes it false. False, false, true, false, false, true, all make it false. For a two-way implication, an equivalence, is true if and only if they have the same truth value, if they're both true or they're both false. So this will be made false by true, false, or false, true. P implies Q is false if and only if the first member is true and the second is false. because all it tells you is, if this is true, this one is, it's the only way to deny it. And finally, P or Q is true if either one is true. So the only way to make this false is to assign both false. Commit that to your memory. Give it to your subconscious care and keeping, and have it on tap, on call, so you can recall it to your conscious whenever you need it. That's the only way you're going to be able to assign an argument T's and F's so as to prove that it's an invalid argument. I will tell you right now, on the final exam, one of the questions will be, prove the following argument is invalid by assigning T's and F's. Clear? All right, that's one of the new things we covered. But we covered other new things as well. I'm going to take all this off here now. At least I fancy I am. We have only the very best equipment here. There we go. The next thing we learned to do was to construct a proof by conditional proof. It's a way that makes most proofs shorter, quicker, easier to do. And there are some that can't be done without it. So my advice to you was this. Don't try to guess for any argument whether it can be done without it or not. You'll waste a lot of time, especially on an exam. Wherever you can use conditional proof, do it. Because it may be one of the arguments that can't be done any other way. And even if it can be done without it, it'll be done more quickly and more easily with it. So here's an example. Let's try this one. E or F implies H and M. M or T implies Z. Therefore, E implies Z. It's short. It's damn difficult without conditional proof, but with it, remember what we do. We treat the entire argument as a line on which to use the rule exportation. P implies the Q implies Z. Therefore, what's in the Q position is E, and it can be rewritten over with the premises. CP, conditional proof. Anytime the conclusion is an implication or equivalent to one, you can write the antecedent of the implication into the list of premises, solve for Z, and when you get the Z, then you can write that E implies Z. And that's also a conditional proof step. So here we have E or F, that's addition to 3. 5, H, and M, that's modus ponens of 4 and 1. Simplify the M, simplification of 5. M or T, addition to 6. Z, modus ponens of 7 and 2. And now, having had one conditional proof step, you write another. E implies Z, conditional proof. this will come in very handy, especially on an exam, right? You want to do things the quickest way, make the best use of your time. Certainly not wasting time making needless steps all over the place when you can just get nail the thing by conditional proof. I want to say something else that you may run into in an argument, and I want to talk about that for a little bit. It's nothing difficult or weird or strange, so we don't need to take a lot of time with it. But every once in a while you run into an argument that's inconsistent, that actually has premises that entail a conclusion. I'm sorry, that entail a contradiction. A contradiction. Whenever you get a contradiction in the lines of the proof, then you are two steps from any conclusion whatsoever. Here's an example. Let me get this off the board first. Boy. Okay, here's an example of an argument that contains an inconsistency. Now, my advice to you about any line of an argument that has a not outside of brackets is to immediately do De Morgan's theorem and get rid of that not outside the brackets. Move it inside and see what you really are working with. So line 3 should be rewritten first, and it's B, not B, and not C. De Morgan's theorem of 3. And now you've got something to work with. Look at line 1. We'll take not B, simplify from 4, and look at line 1. A implies B, not B, therefore not A. That's modus tollens of 1 and 5. And then, having gotten... why did we want not A? Yeah, sorry, folks. Boy, I didn't need to copy it right, did I? We wanted not A because of line 2. If it's written correctly, that's modus ponens. Not A will give you C. You have not A, so you get C by modus ponens of 2 and 6. And now you can notice that you have a contradiction. You've got not C and C. So what do you want to do? Well, here's what you do. You simplify and get the not C, simplification of 4. And as I said, you are now two steps from any conclusion you want. What do you want? You want D. So to C, add D. Rule of addition. Addition to 7. C or D? You have not C, you do disjunctive syllogism, and you get D. Eight and 9. In other words, once you see the contradiction to one of the contradictory statements, disjoin the conclusion you want, anything you want, by rule of addition, and then do disjunctive syllogism and derive it. So inconsistency is an easy thing to handle. And in fact, if you see it on an exam, you can welcome it. It means the proof's short and quick. It's going to end in two steps. Add by rule of addition what you want for the conclusion, do disjunctive syllogism, and you're done. Okay. Let's take a look at another proof, just a straightforward proof of validity, and then we'll look at another CP proof, and then maybe we'll be ready to take a break and go to another subject. Let's look at our validity proof, see if we can get that up here. Our board's a bit wet here, so I'm going to move further down here. Take a look at this argument while the board dries in that spot. Okay, so here we have line one. If V is true, not W is true, and if X is true, Y is. Line two, not W implies Z, and Y implies not A. Line three, Z implies not B, and A implies C, not A implies C. We have V and X, we solve for not B and C. So I think it's pretty obvious how this goes, right? For the first move, we take V implies not W by simplification of 1. And by simplification of 4, we take V. There's an obvious modus ponens step, not W, modus ponens of 5 and 6. Why do we want that? Well, we want not W because it's going to give us Z, and Z is going to give us the conclusion, one of the members of the conclusion, not B. See it? If you have not W, you get Z. If you have Z, you get not B. That's what we're after. So we have this. We can simplify and get this. This is from simplification of 2. Again, this is another modus ponens step. We get Z, modus ponens of 7 and 8. I'm simplifying, get Z implies not B from line 3. Another modus ponens step, not B. Modus ponens of 9 and 10. That's half the conclusion. Now we want the other half. The other half is C. And so how are we going to get that? Well, look over here. We have an X. We can simplify that. X implies Y. Y implies not A. Not A implies C. So let's just do the obvious things first. 12, X implies Y. Simplification of 1. 13, Y implies not A. Simplification of line 2. 14. This is hypothetical syllogism. See it? If you have X, you get Y. If you have Y, you get not A. So X implies not A. Hypothetical syllogism of 12 and 13. Now we have an X sitting down here. X, simplification of 4. And 16, not A by modus ponens of 15 and 14. And now you can join line 11 and line, well, no, we wanted B, hold on. Yes, not B and C. A implies C. 17. Not A implies C. Modus ponens again. C. Modus ponens 16 and 17. And now we have not B and C. Not B is down there in line 11. Not B and C, conjunction of 18 and 11. A fairly straightforward kind of proof. The moves are rather easy, although it's a little bit lengthy. It's longer than you've been working on. It's okay. It doesn't matter. It's just more of the same. It's not any harder. I wish I could ask you if there are any questions, but I'll assume that this is clearing up, what's getting better, and we'll take a look at one more CP, one more conditional proof example. And I'm going to assume that the middle of the board can be written on here. Line 1, E or F implies H and M. 2, M or T implies Z. Therefore, E implies Z. Again, because the conclusion is an implication, you're entitled to take the antecedent and put it back into the list of the premises. Put it over into the list. Solve for Z and then write that E implies Z. In other words, you move it over by the rule exportation. After you get the Z, you move it back by the rule exportation. So here's step 3 is going to be E, conditional proof. 4, E or F, addition to 3. Modus ponens. If you have E or F, you get H or M. You have E or F, H and M. Modus ponens of 4 and 1. We have both H and M. We can take just M. Simplification of 5. To the M, by rule of addition, we can add T. Addition to 6. M or T gives us Z by modus ponens of 7 and 2. And now we can write that E implies Z. For any step you get after the first CP step, you can write another line that says the CP step implies it. So here it is, CP. And that turns out to be an easy proof. On the final exam, there will be one proof of invalidity. There will be several proofs of validity. At least one of those will require conditional proof. That is, I will make sure it's one that can't be done without it. So just always use it, and you'll be safe.